ಪ್ರಜಾರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಜನ ವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ ಜಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ ಜಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಶ್ಯಾಮ ಸುಂದರ ರಾಧಾ ಶ್ಯಾಮ ಸುಂದರ ರಾಧೆ ಜಯ ಗೌರನಿತಾಯ 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 ಜಯ ಗೌರನಿತಾಯ ಜಯ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ 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 ಜಯ ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಿತಾಯ ಗೌರ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ್ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ್ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ ನಿತಾಯ ಗೌರ ಹರಿ ಬೋಲ್
ಜಯ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸತ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಬಲರಾಮ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾಶ್ಯಾಮ್ ಸುಂದರ್ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರ್ನಿತಾಯ ಕೀ ಜಯ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕೀ ಜಯ ನಿತಾಯ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದೇ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಗೌರಂಗ. Hare Krishna. So in our overview of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, we began by trying to understand the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And based upon the suggestions given by all the assembled devotees, we made several categories for all knowledge that pertains to the Srimad Bhagavatam, specifically knowledge about the Bhagavatam. The different categories that were suggested were, number one, about how, where, when, why, by whom and to whom it was spoken, and how many times it was spoken. In other words, how the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled, how it was transmitted down the ages. That was one category. The second is the subject that the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with. What are the different topics that are discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam? How these topics are discussed in different sections of the Bhagavatam and how they interrelate with each other. The third category was of qualifications for the speaker, the hearer of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who can speak, who can hear. Qualifications for understanding also the Srimad Bhagavatam, that was a third category. The fourth category pertained to the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the benefits gained by hearing, reciting and understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. And the next last category that was given, mentioned by all of you, was the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's put it like this, let's call it the exalted status of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And where from does the Srimad Bhagavatam derive its authority? The authority is supreme, and where does it derive this authority from, and so on. And how is it related to the other elements of the Vedic literature? So these were the five categories that emerged from your suggestions. We began with the last category, in which we discussed the exalted position of the Srimad Bhagavatam to show how it derives its authority. And in the course of this discussion, the first thing we mentioned was that Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Sri Krishna. And it is non-different from Sri Krishna. And one assignment was given to everybody. That assignment was that you have to write a small essay on how the Srimad Bhagavatam performs the same functions that Krishna does. Krishna mentions in the Gita, he descends to establish principles of dharma, to protect the devotees and to destroy the miscreants. So in what way does Srimad Bhagavatam fulfill these functions? We saw that it also rises and sets like the sun. Just like Krishna's appearance and disappearance is transcendental, Krishna is eternal, but he appears and disappears out of his own sweet will, transcendentally in this world. Similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam also, being transcendental, being eternal, being non-different from Krishna, appears and disappears in this world out of its own sweet will. So, how many have so far tried to write down some thoughts on this? How many have written some points on how the Srimad Bhagavatam is acts like Krishna in these three aspects? Okay, only few have written. So perhaps by tomorrow some more will write. So tomorrow we would like to hear from some of the devotees who have written. Then I can call on random at devotees. And then you can come and present your thoughts. on how the Srimad Bhagavatam acts in a way that is non-different from Krishna. So now we have understood why it is exalted, because it is a literary incarnation of Krishna and it is non-different from Krishna. Eternal, transcendental, infinite, inconceivable, etc., etc. Whatever Krishna is, Srimad Bhagavatam also is. As Krishna is Rasaraj, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, he is the embodiment of all nectarian mellows, so is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Like that, Srimad Bhagavatam is also beautiful. Like Krishna is beautiful, most attractive, Srimad Bhagavatam is also most beautiful and attractive. The very word Srimad means beautiful. In some quotes, Srila Prabhupada mentions, he said, this beautiful Bhagavatam, meaning this Srimad Bhagavatam. So every quality of Krishna is also manifested here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then how does it relate to all the other Vedic scriptures? Then we saw how it is the topmost scripture, and amongst the Puranas it is the greatest. We also saw that it is the essence of the Vedas and the Vedanta. And we were at this point yesterday, and we also discussed how it is important for us to recite verses, what the benefits were from reciting verses is here. Okay, it is in the, anyway, all of you have noted down those benefits. Now, I would suggest that even after this 3 or 4 day seminar is over, these things should not be forgotten, and the groups should be made by devotees according to your convenience. And you meet and not only study Prabhupada's books according to your convenience, but also recite verses. And especially in this Purushottam Adhik Mas, it is extremely useful. Of course, we are gathering together every evening to chant some verses also. And if you have some more time, squeeze in some time here and there, if this, your service permits that, then you can get together. And how many of you would like to form such groups amongst yourselves and on a regular basis recite selected verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and also other scriptures? How many would like to do that on a regular basis? And how many would like to have cards made or books we can carry with you where you can recite these verses regularly? We saw there are almost 33 benefits, and there are more actually. So you're depriving yourself of these benefits if you don't do it. So maybe you can start with the groups even right away after the seminar is over, or even during, depending on how much time is available. So coming to how to make groups, that is up to you. It can be made bigger according to your convenience, your timings and your convenience, you can make these groups. Can we cut out the top part? This. Can you cut out the top part from this so the space can be utilized for it? It's blowing up. Who is the computer expert here who can do this? Can you cut out the top part? You can't do that? All those things? You can all read this. So we were at this point when we talked about, we are still in this category, talking about the exalted nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the source of its authority and how it relates to the other Vedic literatures, we saw that it is the essence of the Vedas and the Vedanta, and we chanted this verse, Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam. Now, in the purport, in the first one of this verse, there are different sections of the purport that I have taken out. It says, it is stated that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but it is a ripened fruit of all other Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of Vedic knowledge. Again, look at point number 3. This is important. The word Shuka means parrot. In Sanskrit, the parrot is also known as Shuka. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Shukadev Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. The subject matter is so presented through the lips of Shukadev Goswami that any sincere listener that hears submissively can at once relish transcendental tastes which are distinct from the perverted tastes of the material world. And then there are many other wonderful things mentioned. So the example of the parrot is very important. Srimad Bhagavatam is so carefully presented that a sincere and serious person can at once enjoy the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge simply by drinking the nectarian juice through the mouth of Shukadev Goswami or his bona fide representative. So this is the quality of an acharya like Shukadev Goswami, that he makes everything even sweeter. Just as a parrot, the example of a parrot, it is said in common folk sayings that when a parrot touches its beak and cuts a fruit, then that fruit becomes sweeter. I think we should have the light on. No? Devotees are writing also, so one light maybe. So it becomes even sweeter. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is already sweet, because it is non-different from Krishna, and Krishna is the all-sweet. But nevertheless, when an acharya, when a pure devotee, rasika bhakta like Shukadev Goswami speaks, it becomes even more sweet. And he is presenting the essence, the cream. And this is mentioned in the next verse. So this verse is also nice. Tadidam grahayamasa sutam atmavatam varam sarvavedetihasanam saram saram samudhritam. So you need not remember the first two lines if you don't want, but at least remember the last two lines. Sarva Vedetihasanam Saram Saram Samudhritam. Ved Itihas. Of all the Vedas and the Itihasas, Itihas means a history, like the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and so on. So of all the Vedas and the Itihasas, this Srimad Bhagavatam is a saram saram. The word saram means essence. So it is the essence. And incidentally, Sarang Thakur Prabhu, do you know what your name means? Saranga? Some meanings? Anything?
Anyone winning? Sar, Saram. Prabhupada explains in one of the purports in first canto. Saram means essence. And one who knows the essence or approaches the essence, ga, one who moves towards the essence, in other words, one who attempts to understand and succeeds in understanding the essence, is saranga. So therefore, saram, saram, samudritam. So a devotee is called a saranga. Because a devotee understands the essence of creation. A devotee understands the essence of all the Vedic literature. Otherwise, the Vedic literatures are bewildering. Shrutayo vibhinna, tarko apratishtha. By arguments, you cannot understand the absolute truth. Just by going through the scriptures, you cannot understand, because there are numerous varieties of scriptures. And if anybody tries to understand the absolute truth by going through the different varieties of Vedas and the Puranas, Itihasas, and so on and so forth, it is assured that he will be completely bewildered. Even the most brilliant persons in creation are bewildered. What then to speak of ordinary people of this world in this Kali Yuga? Therefore, you see, even in Prabhupada's time, there were many learned brahmanas, Chaturvedis, Trivedis, Dvivedis, Vedis, who had such titles and such surnames, and who came to meet Prabhupada. And they were learned in the Vedic Shastras, then they were Sanskrit Pandits and so on. But when Prabhupada asked them who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they could not answer. Because they were so caught up in all the mantras and all the other things, they didn't understand this. So this is the difference between the Vedas and the Puranas. As Prabhupada will mention in one of the purports later on, that the Vedas are to be chanted by those who are proficient in chanting mantras. And it requires a lot of special training. The brahmanas, the caste, those who are actually brahmanas, they chant these mantras. And mostly it deals with fruitive activities, the Vedas. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, Atharva Veda. And then there are the Puranas and the Itihasas and so on, the Smriti Shastras. And that is relished more by what Prabhupada calls the Parivrajakacharyas. The devotees of the Lord who simply wander here and there glorifying the Lord and spreading His message everywhere. They may or may not be expert in pronouncing the mantras of the Vedas. Like when Suta Goswami is addressed by the sages at Naimisharanya, they say, "My dear Suta Goswami, you are expert in the Vedas except for some sections." And Prabhupada explains in the purport, what is the meaning of that? Why do they say you are expert in the Vedas except for some sections? That means you are not expert in the Karmakanda section. Because that doesn't, you are not connected, you have no business dealing with fruitive activities. So similarly, in our devotional life also, we are not taught Karmakanda rituals. We are not familiar with all these different scriptures, of what the Aranyakas say, all the Brahmanas say, all the different types of Agama Shastras say. So we are concerned with the essence. It is otherwise impossible to find out what the scriptures are saying. There seem to be so many contradictions. So it is bewildering. But if we study Srimad Bhagavatam, that is a cream of everything. Saram Saram Samudritam. So because the devotees are sarangas, they like the essence of everything, so they prefer the Srimad Bhagavatam. And later we'll come to the point when Prabhupada says, therefore the Mayavadis have no business dealing with Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore Prabhupada explains, Sripad Shankaracharya, who advocated the Mayavad philosophy, and who wrote such a celebrated commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is called Sharira Kabhashya, he did not write any commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. He wrote on Bhagavad Gita, he wrote on Vedanta Sutra, he wrote on the Upanishads, he wrote on many other scriptures. But he did not write a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says, because he knew that Srimad Bhagavatam was a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, and he would be unable to surpass that natural commentary. And in any case, Srimad Bhagavatam was for the devotees. It is only for pure devotional service. So he did not venture to write a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, for us who are seeking the absolute truth, it is sufficient to study the Bhagavatam. We don't need to study the Vedas. Sometimes we have people coming to our temples. I remember one time I was standing outside our bookstall talking to Jai Nithai Prabhu, and one gentleman came. He said, "Do you have the Vedas here?" I said, "All these are Vedic literatures." "No, I want Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Veda." He wanted to buy the Vedas. So I explained that it is not possible in this age for us to understand these Rig Veda, Sam Veda, Yajur Veda. It is so vast, so complicated, so many different topics being discussed. We cannot understand. And even the Sanskrit language of those Vedas are so complicated. Whereas Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana, the Sanskrit language is far simpler. Especially it is said for those who are newcomers to Sanskrit language, Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, they are the best kinds of scriptures. It's so simple. But the Vedas are very complicated. The grammar, the prose, the poetry, very difficult to understand. And even if you are a master of Sanskrit, the conclusions will bewilder you. You will not be able to figure out what is what, because you see so many contradictions and you get distracted by the fruitive emphasis of the Vedic literature. So here is Saram Saram. Sarva Vedetihasanam Saram Saram Samudhritam. So at the end of this class and perhaps later also, we can just remember these two lines. What are the two lines without looking? Sarva Vedetihasanam Saram Saram Samudhritam. So this is the essence. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is the translation. Sri Vyasadev delivered it to his son, who is most respected among the self-realized, after extracting the cream of all Vedic literatures and histories of the universe. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, it is compared to the cream of the milk. Vedic literature is a milk ocean of knowledge. A cream or butter is the most palatable essence of milk. And so also is Srimad Bhagavatam, for it contains all palatable, instructive and authentic versions of different activities of the Lord and His devotees. So what is being done? The Vedic literatures, the entire gamut of Vedic literatures is compared to milk. But what kind of milk is it? Is it a glass of milk? Or a cup of milk? Why is it called an ocean of milk? It's very vast. The number of scriptures are vast. The amount of information, knowledge contained is vast. Everything is vast. It's ocean-like. And for an ordinary person to try to swim in that ocean and reach the other end is practically impossible. Therefore, in the Gita also, Lord Krishna says, what is the essence of the Vedas? What is the purpose of the Vedas? Vedaishya sarveir aham eva vedyaha. He says, the purpose of the Vedas is to know me, but those who become Vedic pundits, they don't know Krishna. That is the problem. When they don't read Srimad Bhagavatam, and they read only the Vedas, then they are not able to understand Krishna. But here is the cream, the butter of everything. Just like when two people are talking about something, I remember there was one devotee who was a businessman. And he had some problem with his partner. And they had to separate their businesses. So they had to divide the assets and the properties or whatever in their partnership. And this devotee came and he was asking for advice. He said, my partner and I have some conflict, so we want to split our business. But now he wants all the cream and all the butter. In other words, he wants all the prime property, he wants the assets and leaving the other things for me, which are not in a good location. So he was saying he wants the cream and the butter. So what's the meaning of that? He wants the best part of it. He wants the best part of all the business. He wants the location that's to be the best. He wants everything best. So when we say cream and butter of milk, we mean the best part of the milk. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best part of all the Vedic literature. And one who has the cream and the butter, then he doesn't need anything else. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that the purpose of all the Vedas is to know Him, Lord Krishna. And Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Sri Krishna Himself in the form of recorded knowledge. Therefore, it is the cream of all the Vedas. And it contains all historical facts of all times in relation with Sri Krishna. It is factually the essence of all histories. Now this is also an important verse which is very nice to memorize. This emphasizes how Srimad Bhagavatam is Rasa Shastra, which is the other verse which emphasizes that Srimad Bhagavatam is Rasa Shastra. The very first one in this category, which one was that? We chanted that. Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Phalam Shukamukhad Amrata Drava Samyutam Vibhata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Mohur Aho Rasika Bhuvibhavukaha. So, O expert and thoughtful men, please relish the rasa, the nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here also it is mentioned. Again, the fact that it is the essence of all the Vedanta is mentioned here. So this verse is also worth memorizing. So we'll chant that. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasam Rita Triptasya Nanyatrasya Drate Kvachit Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasam Rita Triptasya Nanyatrasya Drati Kvachit. Someone please chant, two devotees can chant. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasamrita Triptasya Nanyatrasya Dratih Kvachit. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate Tadrasamrita Triptasya Nanyatrasya Dratih Kvachit. Srila Prabhupada's translation. Srimad Bhagavatam is declared to be the essence of all Vedanta philosophy. One who has felt satisfaction from his nectarian mellow will never be attracted to any other literature. So the word Saram appears here also. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate. So this Srimad Bhagavat is the essence of the Vedanta. And what's the meaning of the word Vedanta? Veda and Anta. Anta means conclusion, the ultimate conclusion. So the ultimate conclusion of all the Vedic literature is in the Vedanta Sutra or the Vedanta. And this Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of that essence. Right? Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavatam Ishyate. So what is the Srimad Bhagavatam? Essence of the Vedas. not just the essence of the Vedas, it is the essence of the essence of the Vedas. And because it is condensed more and more, just like milk, when you boil it more and more and more, what happens? What do you get? What are the different stages? Any DT cooks here? No. What happens when you boil the milk more and more and more and more? It solidifies, more condensed, and what is the end result? It's very sweet. So the more you condense the Vedas, so the Vedas are like milk, and the more you condense the milk, it becomes sweeter and sweeter. And the essence of the essence, therefore, is very, very sweet. And that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And because it is so sweet, it has rasamrita. Tat rasamrita triptasya. One who has become satisfied by the nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam is never attracted to any other scripture. Na anyatra syat ratihi kvachit. Rati means attraction or attachment. One who has become attached to Srimad Bhagavatam because of its nectar, that person will never be attracted to any other scripture. Because it is full of nectar, full of rasa, full of juice. What is the most palatable part of a fruit? What are the different parts of a fruit? Let's say you have a mango. What are the different parts? Skin, pulp, seed. Now, juice. Yes. Now, what is the most relishable part of the mango? The pulp or the juice? More than the pulp, it's the juice. If there is a fruit which is very dry, it doesn't taste well at all. The taste of a fruit is in the juice, is in the liquidy part. That is where the real taste comes. Whereas, in other fruits that may be dry, that don't have much juice, it's not very tasty. But mango, the skin, I know one devotee who eats it, along with the, he says it has a certain taste, I tried it. It's okay, but not so tasty, it's not so good. Seed, of course, you can't eat. The pulp, yes, you can eat that. But if you're really lucky, you'll get the juice of that pulp. Then that is really delicious. So that's ras. Same way, the essence of all spiritual life is this ras of learning to understand Krishna's pastimes as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is personified, is completely full like just juice. The acharyas have explained that imagine a fruit that has no seed, no skin, it's only juice. Right? So Srimad Bhagavatam is that kind of a fruit. It's only juice from beginning to end. The skin is like Karma Kanda. The seed is like Jnana Kanda. The seed, the skin is bitter to taste, isn't it? When you taste skin, it's bitter. So it's like Karma Kanda. Fruitive activities are bitter. They give you the result in the end. As Narad Muni told Prachina Bharishad, you see all these animals you're seeing in front of you now, they are the animals you killed. Now they will come to kill you. The reactions of all your fruitive activity you will get. So fruitive activity is bitter. And Jnana Kanda makes you hard. It's very difficult. Klesho dhikataras tesham avyakta sattvachetasam avyakta hi gatir dukham dehavad bhiravapyate. Lord Krishna explains in the Gita that for one who tries the Jnana Yoga path to attain the impersonal Brahman, extremely hard, extremely difficult. So the seed is like Jnana Yoga, the skin is like Karma Kanda, and Bhakti Yoga is the pulp, and the essence of Bhakti Yoga is to read Bhagavatam, which is the juice. So then everybody relishes that very much. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is simply juice, simply ras. And therefore one is not attracted to any other fruit. Suppose you're eating, you're drinking the juice of a mango, nice delicious mango, and someone comes and gives you some other kind of fruit, like say, you know, a neem fruit or something. Would you like it? Or a babul fruit? You would not prefer that. You will rather stick to the mango juice. So this is the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how, because it is the essence of the Vedas, because it is simply juice, it is simply nectar. Therefore, anyone who has really become attracted to this literature will never become attracted to any other literature. And here, Srila Prabhupada clarifies in his purport that because those who study Srimad Bhagavatam may not be so expert in reciting the mantras and may not be expert in Sanskrit to such a degree, they are not any lesser than the Brahmanas. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is not considered lesser than any of the Vedas. So Prabhupada says here, there is no difference also between the Vedic mantras and what is explained in the Puranas and the Itihasas. So on one hand you have the Puranas and the Itihasas, and the other hand you have the Vedic mantras. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, it is mentioned in the Madhyandina Shruti that all the Vedas, namely the Sam, Atharva, Rig, Yajur, Puranas, Itihasas, Upanishads, etc., are emanations from the breathing of the Supreme Being. The only difference is that the Vedic mantras are mostly begun with Pranava Omkar, and it requires some training to practice the metric pronunciation of Vedic mantras. But, and this is the important part, but that does not mean that Srimad Bhagavatam is of less importance than the Vedic mantras. On the contrary, it is a ripened fruit of all the Vedas, as stated before. Besides that, the most perfectly liberated soul, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, is absorbed in the studies of the Bhagavatam, although he is already self-realized. So now we have seen how it is the essence. The Srimad Bhagavata is the essence of the Vedas. And also we saw one quote on the Vedanta. And now, there are some quotes from Chaitanya Charitamrita on how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of not just the Vedas, not just the Vedanta, but also the essence of the Mahabharata and the essence of the Gayatri Mantra. You see, the background for this is that Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, has gone to Kashi. And there he has met the celebrated leader of the Mayavadi sannyasis, whose name was Prakash Ananda Saraswati. And there is a nice discussion that ensues. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about the Vaishnava philosophy. He speaks about the understanding of Vedanta. Prakashananda Saraswati and his associates are very, very impressed. They are totally captivated by Mahaprabhu's presentation and also his personal demeanor, his behavior and everything. And then Prakashananda Saraswati asks him that, please explain what you understand to be the Brahma Gayatri, Vedanta Sutra. What is your purport on the Brahma Sutras? And then Mahaprabhu speaks these verses. Prabhu kohe amijiv oti tuchha gyan vyasa sutrera gambhir artha vyasa bhagavan. He says, I am just an ordinary jiva and my knowledge is very minimal. Vyasa sutrera gambhir artha vyasa bhagavan. And the meanings of the Vedanta Sutra are very deep. And Vyasadeva is the Supreme Lord Himself. So He has compiled this and He understands it. And I'll just cut short the verses and go straight to the translation. The meaning of the Brahma Sutra is very grave because its author, Vyasadeva, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. The purport of the Vedanta Sutra is very difficult for an ordinary person to understand. But Vyasadeva, out of his causeless mercy, has personally explained the meaning. If the Vedanta Sutra is explained by Vyasadeva himself, who has written it, its original meaning can be understood by the people in general. The meaning of the sound vibration Omkar is present in the Gayatri Mantra. The same is elaborately explained in the four shlokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as the Chatuh Shloki. whatever was spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Lord Brahma in those four verses of Srimad Bhagavatam was also explained to Narada by Lord Brahma. Whatever Lord Brahma told Narad Muni was again explained by Narad Muni to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva later considered these instructions in his mind. Srila Vyasadeva considered that whatever he had received from Narad Muni as an explanation of Omkar, he would elaborately explain in his book Srimad Bhagavatam as a commentary on the Brahma Sutra. Vyasadeva collected whatever Vedic conclusions were in the four Vedas and 108 Upanishads and placed them in the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra. In the Vedanta Sutra, the purport of all Vedic knowledge is explained. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, the same purport has been explained in 18,000 verses. Therefore, it is to be concluded that the Brahma Sutra is explained vividly in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, what is explained in the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam has the same purport as what is explained in the Upanishads. So the point Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is making here is, not only is the Srimad Bhagavatam the essence of the Vedas and the Vedanta, but it is actually the commentary. It is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. You see, if any Vaishnav Sampradaya has to establish his bona fides, it must have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So during the time of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a challenge came up in Jaipur by the Ramanandis, the followers of the Ramananda Sampradaya, which is an offshoot of the Sri Sampradaya. And they challenged the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in Jaipur, in front of the king of Jaipur, who was a Vaishnava, and who was giving some protection to the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So the Ramanandis were a little uncomfortable with that. So they wanted to challenge the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and show, and try to show, that Gaudiya Vaishnavism was unauthentic. So they said, "My dear king, we have our own Sri Bhashya. We have the commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Every bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya has theirs. But these Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they don't have. So we don't consider that they are authentic Sampradaya." So when the Gaudiya Vaishnavas were called, they explained, "My dear king, our understanding and the teachings of Mahaprabhu is that because the Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary of the Vedanta Sutra, so we don't need to write a separate commentary." Okay, now one question. Why is the Srimad Bhagavatam called the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra? Why not just a commentary? Yes, Shyamala. Correct, very correct. Because the person who wrote Vedanta Sutra himself has written the commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, it is a natural commentary. Who can understand better the intentions of the author than the author himself? Who can comment on the work better than the author himself? So Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra written by Srila Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedanta Sutra and all the Vedas. So they did not feel a need. But nevertheless, because the Ramanandis refused to accept this argument, ultimately the matter came to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was the leader of all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas then, but he was too old to go to Jaipur to debate with the Ramanandis. So he sent his Shiksha disciple, Baladev Vidya Bhushan, who wrote a commentary. He went there and challenged the Ramanandis, but when they insisted that a commentary had to be written, he said, "Okay, I will give one in 1 month." It was like a phenomenal thing. 1 month, just in 1 month to write a whole commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. It would take years usually to write. But Govindadev in Jaipur was very merciful. And Govindadev empowered Baladev Vidya Bhushan to write a wonderful commentary on the Vedanta. And therefore, Baladev Vidya Bhushan titled this commentary as Govinda Bhashya. And Srila Prabhupada has dedicated his Bhagavad Gita as it is. To what? To Baladev Vidya Bhushan, the writer of the Govinda Bhashya. So this is how important it is. So Mahaprabhu's Siddhanta is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And because the Vedanta Sutra is itself an explanation of the Omkar, of the Gayatri Mantra, so therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam automatically is a commentary on all of these things. It is also commentary on the Mahabharata. So this is another important point of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Siddhanta, that Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on the Vedanta, on the Mahabharata, on the Gayatri, and also on the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam gives the actual meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. The author of the Vedanta Sutra is Vyasadev, and he himself has explained these aphorisms in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here is another important verse. We don't have to remember it if you don't want to, but the meaning is important. Mahaprabhu explains, the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra is present in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is from one of the Puranas actually. Mahaprabhu quotes that. The full purport of the Mahabharata is also there. The commentary of the Brahma Gayatri is also there and fully expanded with all Vedic knowledge. So there are many, many quotes like this. So we won't go through all the quotes. When the book comes out eventually, you can study scrutinizingly. We'll have to add many, many things more. It's going to need a lot of hard work. We have compiled all this and it's going to take more work, but still, you can get an essence of it now. And here is Prabhupada's purport on the point I had mentioned earlier. Srimad Bhagavatam is the one unrivaled commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. Sripad Shankaracharya intentionally did not touch it because he knew that the natural commentary would be difficult for him to surpass. He wrote his Sharirika Bhashya, and his so-called followers deprecated the Bhagavatam as some new presentation. One should not be misled by such propaganda directed against the Bhagavatam by the Mayavad school. Okay. So this goes to show how the Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary in all these different scriptures. Now the question arises, what is the relationship between the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam? Should we know Bhagavad Gita before we begin Bhagavatam? What is the relationship between the two of them? So I extracted a whole series of quotes on the relationship between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. It is called Brahma Samhitam because it is a sound representation actually of Lord Krishna, like the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a sound incarnation of the Lord because it is spoken by the Supreme Lord, and Srimad Bhagavatam is a sound representation of the Lord because it was spoken by the incarnation of the Lord about the activities of the Lord. So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining in many places in these purports that it is necessary for us to understand the basic principles of Bhagavad Gita before we can go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. However, he goes to point out that both Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are necessary. They are both meant for the upliftment of the world. Both are transcendental. Both are Krishna Katha. One is Katha about Krishna. One is Katha by Krishna. And one who becomes authorized in the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, who understands the science of Krishna, can actually preach everywhere. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are like torch bearers for the blind people of this age. So when we say Srimad Bhagavatam, we automatically understand that the Bhagavad Gita is also included. So in our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, we must also include Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Prabhupada's program was perfect. Morning, Srimad Bhagavatam class. Evening, email time. Sorry, Bhagavad Gita class. Evening is Bhagavad Gita class. Right? So both these things make a perfect combination. Then Prabhupada mentions here, Srimad Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study of knowledge for one who has thoroughly understood the principles of Bhagavad Gita. So first there is Bhagavad Gita, and then there is Srimad Bhagavatam, and then there is Chaitanya Charitamrita. Again, in the next purport, Prabhupada mentions that the Bhagavad Gita covers five topics. Which are the five topics covered in Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kal, Karma. So, are these topics also covered in Bhagavatam? What does it say? See the last sentence. All these subject matters are concisely discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, and later the subject matters are elaborated in the Srimad Bhagavatam for further enlightenment. In other words, where the Bhagavad Gita leaves off, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins. So these five topics have been given in brief in the Bhagavad Gita, but in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is elaborately explained. For example, the process of creation is given very briefly in just a few verses in the Bhagavad Gita. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, very elaborate descriptions are found in different parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the last section that I would like to discuss of the exalted nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that it is attractive even to liberated souls. Those who are already Atmaram, those who are already situated on the spiritual platform, even they are attracted by it. That goes to show that this is something special. Recently there was a big controversy. I don't know how many of you are aware. Since I don't read the papers, I was not aware till somebody came and told me. The Supreme Court of India, they passed some judgment. There was some decision before them about whether a man and woman living together without marriage, is it to be considered crime or not? If they live together, I don't know technically what they call something like living in before marriage, live in relationships before marriage, is it against the law or not? So this came up before the Supreme Court. So there was a newspaper report, it seems, and then a lot of television stations covered this apparently. And the judges in the Supreme Court commented in their observations that when Radha and Krishna also were together without marriage, then what is the harm? So they made a judgment that it is not a crime, it is all right to live together before marriage. So there was a hue and cry naturally. Many Hindu groups protested and many others came. And as you know, the media, they are just publicity hungry. They have no ethics and morals. So they just wanted to exploit the situation to increase their sales and their viewership. So they started doing a whole series of articles and programs and interviews, and they asked all sorts of people about Radha Krishna. All the Vedic pundits. What do the Vedic pundits know about Radha Krishna? As we have seen, they don't even know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then they gave all kinds of confused, muddled explanations, and the viewers and readers were even more confused. And this created a big havoc. You see, this is such serious violence when the faith of the ordinary person is attacked this way. And we have all these confused so-called pundits giving all kinds of imaginary explanations. And where does that leave the common man? The common man is then completely bewildered. And he thinks that, well, it's all right. Yes, Radha Krishna, it happened like this, so I can also do this. They don't understand what is Radha Krishna relationship. They don't understand who is Krishna, who is Radharani, what is the nature of their relationship. So as soon as I reached Bombay, the first thing I said is, I heard is, we have arranged an appointment for you with some journalists. So I said, for what? He said, to talk about Radha Krishna. I said, of all things, why Radha Krishna to journalists? Then he explained, this is the background. There is a big controversy going on in the media. So then the journalists came and everything. I said, look, I'm very afraid to talk to all of you. Because I say something, you will print something else and then we'll all be in big trouble. We don't know what you people will print. You are famous for, you know, misrepresenting what the speaker says. And this is such a delicate, sensitive topic. If you may just produce or reproduce partly here, partly one sentence there and put it together to make something different. So I said, anyway, if you promise to just faithfully reproduce what I say and I'll have to speak at length, are you willing to sit and hear? So they said, yes. So they gave a whole half an hour lecture on who is Krishna, first of all. We'll come to Radharani later. First understand who is Krishna. Then spoke a little bit about Radharani, energy and energetic and so on. Then gave the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other sannyasis. I said, look, you are all aware what is a sannyasi. A sannyasi is not meant to have any relationship with women in a bodily sense. He stays far away from these things. Now we had exalted great sannyasis who perform severe austerities, very strict in their vows, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramanujacharya, many Nimbarkacharya, Vishnu Swami, many others on the exalted platform of transcendence. Please tell us, if the relationship between Radha and Krishna was an ordinary mundane relationship of this world, why would sannyasis hear about this, talk about this, read about this, meditate about this day after day, year after year, and not only that, they consider it the perfection of their life to understand this relationship? A sannyasi will never have anything to do with any mundane descriptions of the relationship between men and women in this world. That is common in this world, the cinema, the magazines, books, novels, newspapers, everywhere outside in the world, it is just that. There is hardly anything but that. And devotees even, what you speak of sannyasis, any devotee doesn't like to relish such discussions. So therefore Prabhupada said devotees should not study mundane literature, we should not watch television, we should not read all these mundane novels and so on. So then why would Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and such others, exalted personalities, dedicate their whole life to studying the activities of Radha and Krishna? And why would they glorify it and make it an object of their meditation? Mahaprabhu was such a strict sannyasi that no woman could actually sit in front of him and talk to him. They would be sitting at a distance. He was so careful of his principles. Extremely careful. And in fact, one time when the son, small son of one lady who was a widow, her husband died when she was young. She had just given birth to the child. And this young boy would come often to Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. And Mahaprabhu would give a lot of mercy to the child. And Mahaprabhu's associate, I think it was Damodar Pandit, he admonished Mahaprabhu, you're a sannyasi, what will people say? Why are you so partial to this child? The mother of this child is a young widow. What will people think? So you see, Mahaprabhu then understood immediately, said, yes, yes, I will follow what you say. So Mahaprabhu was so strict. Chota Haridas, one time, he went to get some rice from Madhavi Mataji, who herself was an exalted devotee. And Madhavi. And he went alone to get rice from her. There was nothing wrong in Chota Haridas's mind, neither there was anything wrong in Madhavi's mind, but as a principle, as an etiquette, as a code of conduct, Chota Haridas should not have gone alone. So when Mahaprabhu heard of it, he actually banished him from his company, just to set the example. So here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so strict in setting standards when it comes to the worldly dealings of men and women, even if they are devotees, why would such a person glorify, worship, remember, write about, talk about the relationship of Radharani and Krishna and all the gopis and Krishna? So therefore we can understand that this is transcendental activities. They are not to be compared to the ordinary relationship of men and women of this world. So therefore we can understand that these pastimes that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam are relished by those who are actually on the liberated platform. For those who are not liberated, they cannot fully relish it. In fact, the pastimes of the gopis with Krishna are meant for those who are completely freed from mundane lust. This is mentioned by Prabhupada in various sections of his purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam and his other teachings. So then, how attractive, how powerful and transcendental must the Srimad Bhagavatam be? All these were liberated souls. So Srimad Bhagavatam is attractive for such souls who have given up all forms of attachment and attraction to the mundane sphere. So this goes to show how great is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Day and night, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would like to hear recitation, and he would chant also the verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam and also from the compositions of other great poets about the activities of Krishna as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Can you mention some of the names of the poets who Mahaprabhu would hear to? Jayadev Goswami, Chandidas, Vidyapati, Bilvamangal Thakur. The works of these four acharyas are based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they are all very exalted, highly transcendental. In fact, it's hard for the ordinary devotee even to understand. The Gita Govinda of Jayadev Goswami, Prabhupada said we should not read it because it is so exalted, so advanced. Certain portions we do, like Dashavatara Stotra. In fact, every day in the morning we chant the Narasingha prayers. Part of it is from the Dashavatara Stotra. But there are many other sections which are so advanced that only when one is really freed from mundane lust can we actually understand these things. So for the liberated persons, Srimad Bhagavatam is especially attractive. In fact, it is the Paramahansa Samhita, Prabhupada says in many places. And the 12th canto, there is a verse also. So this goes to show that Srimad Bhagavatam is meant actually for the Paramahansas. It is meant for those who are on the transcendental platform. And the best example of this is a speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam himself. Shukadev Goswami was a liberated soul even from birth. What is the proof of that? Who can say? Yes.
After the birth of Shukadev Goswami, he just left the house of his father.
Even before that. Even before that.
Yeah, he did not want to come out from his mother's womb.
Yes.
So Krishna came and told, don't worry that you'll not be touched by my Maya. And after that he came out. And then he started walking to forest without wearing any clothes. And that time in Sarovar, many ladies was bathing. And behind, Vyasadeva was following him. So when Sukadeva passed, that all the ladies, they didn't cover themselves. But when Vyasadevji came, suddenly all the ladies covered their bodies. So Vyasadeva saw it and he asked them, what is this that when my young son left, that time you didn't wear all the clothes, and now why? I'm like your more than grandfather. Then all the ladies told that he's beyond the bodily concept. But you are the grist and you know what is the difference between man and woman.
Excellent. Yes. So it goes to show how exalted Shukadev was. Even those ladies, they understood just by looking at Shukadev Goswami that this person is beyond this man-woman business. He doesn't see. He sees, but he doesn't see. He doesn't distinguish between the body, the male body, female body. So they did not even bother to cover themselves because they knew his vision was completely transcendental, something beyond this world. Vyasadeva was the father of Shukadev. He is the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But when he came and he was much older in age, like their grandfather almost, then they hurriedly got up and covered themselves, and Vyasadeva's question was natural. And they said, because you are in the Grihastha Ashram, so you are forced to make distinctions based on gender. But your son is completely liberated. He is an avadhut. He is just wandering here and there. So this was the platform of Shukadev. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother. And he didn't want to come out because he would be in Maya. He was afraid he would be in Maya if he comes out, because so much Maya outside. For 12 years, in some places it says 16 years, he remained in the womb, and Vyasadeva tried to tell him, please come out, it's time to come out. He didn't come out. Only Krishna had to come and persuade him, please, please come. I assure you protection. Then Shukadev came out. And what did he do? Walked away. Have you heard of any delivery in a maternity ward in a hospital where the child just comes out and walks away and becomes a brahmachari? You know? And Vyasadeva, it is said, although he was such an exalted personality, the literary, he is also an incarnation of the Lord, but he was in the Grihastha Ashram. So there was some attachment. And it is said, he went after Shukadev saying, Ha Putra, Ha Putra. Oh my son, you've become brahmachari, where are you going? Come back. You see, I remember one sannyasi who was from some country in South America. I think it was Venezuela, or not Venezuela, one of those North, Guyana or some one of those countries. And he had a black body, and he was not from ISKCON. He was from another one of the Gaudiya Mutts. So I happened to meet him, and we were talking, and he happened to mention that his parents have 26 children. 26 children. I don't know if his father had other wives also, but anyway, he said his family had 26 children. And he said he was number 21, 22 or something like that. And he said when he became a brahmachari, his mother was crying. So he said, Mother, there are 25 others. Why are you worried? So this is the nature of family attachment, you see. So even Vyasadeva was attached to his son. And he went after Shukadev, saying, Ha Putra, Ha Putra, my son, where are you going? Come back. At that time, this is not mentioned in Prabhupada's books, but it is understood in other places that the disciples of Vyasadev, they went after Shukadev and they chanted one verse which describes, it's from the Bhagavatam, which describes the beauty of Krishna. It's considered one of the most beautiful verses. Anybody knows that verse? Yes. Barha Pidam Natavarabapuhu Karnayuhu Karnikaram. It's a very beautiful verse. Since it is not part of our syllabus here today, we are not describing that. Otherwise, that would have been a very nice shloka to talk about. So immediately, Shukadev Goswami, who was relishing the impersonal in his mind, he was worshipping the impersonal, he was attracted by the Nirakar, the Brahma Jyoti, he stopped in his tracks. Oh, what is this description I'm hearing? Such a beautiful personality. Who is this? Krishna, so attractive. Let me see. So he stopped in his tracks. The father's pleas did not stop Shukadev in his tracks. But when the verse of the Bhagavatam was spoken glorifying Krishna's beauty, then Shukadev stopped. Yes, and he paid attention to it. But as he stopped, he was reflecting on Krishna's beauty, but a doubt came in his mind. What was the doubt? The doubt was, okay, Krishna is very attractive. And I will take shelter of him because he is so attractive. But what if he is not merciful, and what if he rejects me? And then the disciples quoted another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is that one. Aho bakiyam stanakala kutam, which is glorifying how merciful Krishna is. Even to Putana, he delivered her and gave her the position of a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan, even though she tried to actually kill Krishna. So Krishna took the positive side of it, that she wanted to be like my mother, she wanted to feed me milk. So then Shukadev Goswami was satisfied and he stayed back. But elsewhere in one purport, Prabhupada explains that there were two Shukadev Goswami. There is one Shukadev Goswami expanded into two. One stayed back and became a grihastha to satisfy the father, Vyasadev. And here the original Shukadev went on to become an avadhut, and he went on to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. So Vyasadev was also satisfied, and King Parikshit was also satisfied later. And we all have the opportunity to be satisfied by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So such was the status of Shukadev Goswami. And he was attracted by Srimad Bhagavatam. So what does it indicate? It indicates the exalted nature of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can understand when you go in a train, I'm sure we all travel in trains, right? When you go from one city to another. And you will see different people, your co-passengers, reading different types of literature. The first thing I see is, what is this person reading? Then I know his status. There will be somebody who will be reading a cinema magazine, somebody will be reading something else, somebody, some detective novel, pulp novel he picks up from the thing. You can understand what is each person's status. So by looking at the book that somebody is interested in, you can immediately understand where that person's level is. If a person is reading something a little more polished, a little more sophisticated, you can understand, this person is a little more evolved. And then somebody higher and higher. So similarly, you go the other way around. Look at Bhagavatam and see who is attracted to this book. Shukadev Goswami, my God. Then this book must be really great. Because Shukadev Goswami is not an ordinary person. He's a liberated soul. Krishna himself had to come to actually ask him to come out. So this is the glory of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That even a liberated soul like Shukadev Goswami was attracted. So Prabhupada says in the purport, Srila Shukadev Goswami was a liberated soul from his very birth. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother and did not undergo any sort of spiritual training after his birth. At birth, no one is qualified, neither in the mundane nor in the spiritual sense. But Sri Shukadev Goswami, due to his being a perfectly liberated soul, did not have to undergo an evolutionary process for spiritual realization. Yet, despite his being a completely liberated person situated in the transcendental position, above the three modes of material nature, he was attracted to this transcendental ras of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is adored by liberated souls who sing Vedic hymns. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are more attractive to liberated souls than to mundane people. And so on. So there are many such quotes. And of course there is a famous Atmaram verse which we talked about yesterday, in which it is explained that even the Atmarams, Atma Aram, Ram or Aram means pleasure, Atma means the self. So these great transcendentalists who take pleasure in the self, they also become attracted to Krishna because he has so many wonderful qualities. We'll just chant this verse. And at the end of this topic, then we'll halt for question, answers, comments. No lemon water today? Coming? Okay. So after Atmaram verse, when everybody is satisfied with Bhagavatam, then we can satisfy ourselves with lime juice. Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Pyurukrame Kurvantya Hetukim Bhaktim
Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Apyurukrame Kurvantya Hetu Kim Bhaktim Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi.
Two devotees, please chant.
Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Apyurukrame Kurvantya Hetu Kim Bhaktim Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Apyurukrame Kurvantya Hetu Kim Bhaktim Bhuta Guno Harihi.
So let us make it a habit to study the words carefully so we pronounce it clearly. What is the first word? Atma Ramascha. Or Atma Ram or Atma Ram. Atma Rama. Atma Ramascha. Then Nirgrantha, there is Api and Urukrame. But when you combine them, then you pronounce it as Apyurukrame. Nirgrantha Apyurukrame. Because the two words get combined. Similarly, there is Kurvanti and there is Ahitukim. So it becomes Kurvantya Hitukim Bhaktim. Ittham Bhuta Guno Harihi. So the translation. All different varieties of Atma Ramas. Those who take pleasure in in Atma or Spirit Self, especially those established in the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. And then there are many nice purports here, but we won't go through all of them. Apart from Shukadev Goswami, the example of the four Kumaras is also given. Great sages such as the four bachelor devotees, Sanak, Sanatan, Sananda and Sanat Kumar, were attracted by the fragrance of flowers and tulasi leaves anointed with the pulp of sandalwood, offered at the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, Shukadev Goswami was attracted by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Shukadev Goswami was already situated in the liberated stage, yet he was attracted by the pastimes of the Lord. This proves that the quality of his pastimes has nothing to do with material affinity. So there are many, many nice quotes. For those who are interested, you can read this Atmaram verse. And this is the verse that Shukadev Goswami himself says. Parinishthitopi nairgunye uttama shloka leelaya grihita cheta rajarshe akhyanam yad adhitavan. O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses. So we'll stop here at this time for a brief discussion, for a small break. So this goes to show that Srimad Bhagavatam is so exalted that it is attractive even for liberated souls. Common people may or may not be attracted, but the standard for us is that liberated souls are attracted. Therefore, we should also learn to become attracted. Just like in the modern day we see people want to follow what the role models do. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, all the cinema stars, the music stars, the sports stars, they are the role models for society.
So whatever clothes they wear, whatever books they read, whatever views they hold, the common man also likes to follow. I remember still, I'll give you one example. I was at that time perhaps very young in school, and there was one famous cinema star in India. And in one magazine, I was probably in the 8th or 9th standard only at that time. And there was a photograph of this very famous film star. The whole country was mad after him. And there was a photograph of him reading this book called Krishna. Okay? And I was intrigued because it had dot, 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 dot below the R, S and the N. So Krishna, I was thinking, what is this Krishna? I had heard of Krishna, but not this. This was strange. After that, I never heard anything about ISKCON or Krishna consciousness like this. Still, I met devotees many, many years later. But the point is that there's one impression, oh, this person, this great film star, this great famous personality is reading. He was shown, some devotees must have presented it to him and may have taken some photograph or something like that. In any case, this person was reading this. At that time, it was a big book like this, big colored, with pictures. K-R-S-N-A, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a powerful presentation. Our National Communications Director, Rajendranandan Prabhu, was saying that one of their campaigns is to distribute Bhagavad Gita's to such role models. So he was saying in a meeting that they called the Miss India, the most beautiful woman in India who won the Miss India contest or Miss World contest, something, whatever, who was an Indian lady. They called her to the temple and they gifted her Bhagavad Gita, and then she was holding Bhagavad Gita. There was photograph, Miss India with Bhagavad Gita as it is, you know. So he was explaining, what is the logic? He said, when Miss India, such a beautiful lady, comes on the television and says, please read Bhagavad Gita as it is, then what is going to happen? Then everybody will say, yes, 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 I also want to read Bhagavad Gita as it is. So we are just exploiting this principle that these are the role models for the society. And if they say, yes, yes, it's good, then everybody does it. So this is what we are reduced to in our preaching now, because the role models are not great saints. If you go and tell the people on the television to see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu studied Bhagavad Gita, the great saints studied Bhagavad Gita, they're not going to worry or care about it. But Miss India is studying Bhagavad Gita, or some cricket star is studying Bhagavad Gita, yes, yes, then let us see. So the standards have changed. So here for us, the standard is Shukadev Goswami. See, such an exalted person is studying Bhagavatam. So we must also study Bhagavatam. He was attracted to Bhagavatam. The four Kumaras were attracted to Bhagavatam. Many others were attracted. Nine Yogendras were attracted to the Bhagavatam. Even though they were all on the liberated platform. So yes, let us lead our life in such a way. Let us also study and hear Bhagavatam and try to develop an attraction for the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we should make these great saintly persons our role models. And whatever attracts them, we should see that we are also attracted by those things. So this is the topic. The first category discussion is now complete. The first category was, can anybody summarize now? Would anybody like to come up here and speak? What is the first category about? What are the topics that were talked about and some of the important points covered in that? So somebody can give a 10-minute lecture. And at this time, we can start. Before you start deciding who would like to come, we can distribute some Nimbupani, if it is available. Yes, it's there. So can we start some distribution? So who would like to give a talk on whatever we have discussed so far in this first category? What is the first
category? Who would like to speak? Yes? Can some devotees help so that the distribution can be made faster? So who would like to come up after 2 minutes? Okay, so Golok Vrindavan Prabhu, you can come up and speak. And jo bole so kare. Yes? So after 2 or 3 minutes, Golok Vrindavan Prabhu will come and he will give a summary of the first category. Please remember, we are talking about the Srimad Bhagavatam. We identified 5 different categories. In that, we have concluded discussion on the first category. So what were the topics discussed in the first category? And in each topic, what were some of the important points mentioned? You can try to summarize all that. Everybody has received the lime juice. Okay, shall we start? Yes, Goloka Vrindavan Prabhu, you can come up here and make a 10-minute presentation. Only on this first category of topics. So everyone, please settle down now.
Hare Krishna.
He is offering obeisances to Srimad Bhagavatam for all potency. And at the end of it, everybody will ask questions. Okay?
Actually, I'll not be, because I can't quote shlokas and all, but
no, it doesn't matter.
I'll just try to speak what you spoke in essence.
Yes. Systematically, with the different, in the first category, what are the topics that were covered? In each topics, are there some important points that were made? And what is the overall conclusion of this whole first category?
Okay. Like yesterday, when Maharaj started the discussion, so he started with very wonderfully from his notes. He showed his notes that how making notes or any kind of study doesn't go in vain. So he spoke one very nice principle that, so by showing his notes, he said that how study never go in vain. So whatever notes we make, so that's very important. So... So then Maharaj stated about studying Prabhupada books systematically, like it was quoted scrutinizingly. So in that Maharaj explained, scrutinizingly means systematically making notes also. So it's not just reading Prabhupada books, but after reading you have to make notes also. And then we can make categories of the notes. That was also mentioned. So then we talked about the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam. That how Srimad Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna. So therefore, if Srimad Bhagavatam is non-different from... So it's not just a book. So we got a wonderful... perception about what actually Srimad Bhagavatam is. Srimad Bhagavatam is not just a book, but it's non-different from Krishna. It's Krishna himself, which has appeared in the book form. And so therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam should not be dealt like a book. That was a very practical point which I learned yesterday from the discussion. How we should keep the Srimad Bhagavatam and how to deal, how to handle respectfully. And also we discussed this verse we discussed, text 43. I don't know the whole details, I didn't write the whole details, but it was mentioned in this. So the question was, what will be the guiding light in Kali Yuga? Because Krishna has gone now, so who will guide us? Then it was mentioned that since Krishna has left, so the guiding light will be Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam will guide us. So it's avatara or incarnation of the Lord. And also we discuss how Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal like a sun. You know, suppose the sun, he rises from, at one place he rises, then it, from our vision, it looks that it's gone, but it's there, but it's visible at another places. So like that, Srimad Bhagavatam is also eternal. And also we discussed that how Srimad Bhagavatam provides protection to all of us. Srimad Bhagavatam, so we basically discussed what is the real protection. Real protection is not just the protection of the body, but the protection of the heart or the protection of the consciousness. So Srimad Bhagavatam provides us that protection from Maya. So therefore it is very important to perform a regular study of Srimad Bhagavatam. And also we discussed about how hearing, after hearing, we should try to assimilate whatever we hear. It's, hearing is not just after we heard and then we forget, like, you know, after that some contemplation should go on. That's called assimilation of the knowledge, assimilating it. This is it was said that this is a wonderful way of meditation when we try to assimilate. And therefore we should try to exercise our memory this way, because yesterday we discussed how we don't exercise our memory. We discussed about, Maharaj was talking about the different calculations, like to do a small calculation we need a, just to do small calculation we need a calculator. So we should try to exercise our memory. And then we discussed one verse, 1:5:16, where we discussed the how Krishna is available with us right now in the form of Vani, the teachings, the these verses. So how Krishna is still there, we can take association of the Lord through his teachings. And also another point was discussed, how Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost Purana. Of all the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost. Why it is topmost? Because Srimad Bhagavatam, it talks, because it focuses on Krishna and pure devotional service. Although there are other shastras, like shastras coming from the words, mouth of Lord Vishnu, even Srimad Bhagavatam is coming from the Lord. So one may ask, what is the difference between, because all the shastras are coming from the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is also coming. Why it is topmost? Because other literatures, other Vedic literatures, they discuss about Vishnu as well as other demigods also. But Srimad Bhagavatam only talks about Krishna. It focuses on Krishna and it focuses on pure devotional service. But other Vedic literatures, they talk about fruity mentality or sense gratification. And then there was one discussion took place about whether we should cut Prabhupada books, like while underlining. Then the one nice principle was talked, that if it helps our study, if it helps to absorb us, then we can always make notes even in Prabhupada books.
Carefully.
Carefully. And another point was talked about how we should recite verses, coming together and reciting verses. And there was one Vedic principle was given, that how earlier time, how this repetition was very powerful. Like spiritual master used to recite, and disciple just by hearing, they used to remember. So this was like a repetition method was there, because they were Shrutidhars, they would just hear and then they used to remember. So how this helps us absorb our consciousness. And then we talked about around many benefits, around 31 benefits of reciting the verses. And today we talked about how Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedas, and how Vedas are so oceanic, it's like milk ocean, they're so vast, so deep, but once we get into it, we can't swim. It's like we'll just be there, you know, we can't come out. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of that milk ocean. So Srimad Bhagavatam is that cream or the essence. And also we discussed a very important point about how Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Not only Vedanta Sutra, but it's the essence, but it talks also about this Gayatri and the Vedas. And why it is natural commentary? Because it is directly written by the author, that is Vedavyas. Vedavyas only he wrote Vedanta Sutra, but then Vedavyas only gave the essence of the Vedanta Sutra, and we cannot know the, so who can better know the, we cannot know the intentions of the author. So Vedavyas himself has given us this direct commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So that's why it is a natural commentary. And then finally we talked about how there is a relationship between the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, how they are related. Both are sound vibrations, and where Bhagavad Gita ends, then Srimad Bhagavatam starts. And ultimately we talked about how Srimad Bhagavatam is even attracted to liberated souls. Like we have a wonderful example of Sukhdev Goswami, and also Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hearing from Gadadhar Pandit. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Quite nice. No, you have to answer questions. Questions. So, and if you have any questions, it was a good presentation. We summarized quite a few points of them. So you have to ask Goloka Vrindavan Prabhu now. You can take questions. By questions, I meant about what was actually spoken, in case he has missed out something, or in case you think that something is presented right or wrong, that we can discuss. Yeah, but something specifically pertaining to the presentation, or what was discussed, if you missed out anything or something like that, yes. But we'll take that question also.
There is one point that Srimad Bhagavatam acts like Krishna. Is there any example or sloka we quoted?
When Sukhdev Goswami, he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, he got purified. So he acted like Krishna. And we have a wonderful example of all of us.
Any verse? You got the question what Madhav Gopal Prabhu asked? What is the example given in one of the verses that we covered? Yes, but the example of how Srimad Bhagavatam is similar to Krishna, I mean in terms of, yes. Yeah, but specifically with regard to the Bhagavatam, yes, Shubha Krishna. Okay, nice, front Govind. It brings a revolution in the sinful lives of the people, yes. Yes, especially the example of the sun, right? Because Krishna rises like the sun and sets like the sun. In the sense, Krishna is always existing, but he appears and disappears like the setting and rising of the sun. Same with the Srimad Bhagavat also, appears and disappears. It appears of its own sweet will transcendentally. It manifests its presence in this universe. But Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal, it is infinite, and in the Idam Bhagavatam Nama Shloka, we have all the adjectives, no? Dhanyam, Swasti, Ayanam, Mahat, and so on. It is blissful, transcendental, all-knowing, all-perfect, all-successful. These are all the qualities of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? To the other questions, somebody else had raised hand to ask question. Okay, anyway, you've done a good job. You can sit down. Thank you. So just coming to Pran Govind Prabhu's question, that generally when we talk of commentary, you mean a verse by verse commentary. Then you take a verse and then talk about it, comment on it, go to the next verse like that. Yes, the commentaries like the ones given by the Acharyas are like that. See, all the commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra written by the Acharyas of the four Vaishnav Sampradayas, they are like that. Just like Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Gita, verse by verse. But Srimad Bhagavatam is not exactly verse by verse, but the same verses are there in different format, in different way. And we'll see at other places also that he begins by talking about the Gayatri Mantra. When he says Satyam Param Dhimahi, and he actually discusses. So he discusses the purport or the real meaning. Anyone knows what are the first few verses of the Vedanta Sutra? Janmadyasya yataha. Right? Athato Brahma Jigyasa is there, that you must inquire into the Absolute Truth. And then it soon starts with Janmadi Asyata. And what does Srimad Bhagavatam start with? Exactly the same thing, isn't it? And immediately Vyasadeva has established the conclusion. That is Vasudeva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasyataha. So that means he from whom everything emanates, he on whom everything rests after annihilation, he who creates everything, who maintains everything, destroys everything, is Vasudeva or Krishna. So in this way, you can say it is like a purport. Not exactly a verse-by-verse commentary, but it is a purport on the whole, all the different sutras of the Vedanta. Any other points, any comments, anything you want to add? Yes. The mic can be circulated.
Question.
How many mics do we have? Two. Okay, yeah. Vajrayana.
It's a question. It's like, generally when we hear that the sequence of reading is like first we read Bhagavad Gita, then we understand Srimad Bhagavatam, then we go to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and all. And recently I read in one purport in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Prabhupada says that it's easy to understand Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat than to understand Srimad Bhagavatam for people of this age. And also there's less chance of misunderstanding, because in Krishna's pastime sometimes people misunderstand. So then just I wanted to understand like how we can understand that we generally first go through Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, what Srila Prabhupada meant actually is the pastimes. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also would say to his disciples, especially in Bengal, say first read Chaitanya Bhagavat. Because there it was so much part of the culture. It was easy for them to relate to identify with. So they would easily read and understand and appreciate the pastimes of Mahaprabhu as given in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So then it became easy for them to accept the Bhagavatam and other things. Chaitanya Charitamrita, the pastimes are there, but there's also heavy philosophy in many parts, in the beginning and also in various other sections. So it is quite an exalted literature. It is even after the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what Prabhupada meant was talking about the pastimes. That's the first part. The second point is, and we'll see one quote in the next section when we discuss, that just as Krishna and the holy name are to be understood through the medium of and by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this age, similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is best understood by the mercy of and by the explanations of, by the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken a great deal about the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedanta Sutra and so on in his teachings to Prakashananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and also in talking with his associates. So we can learn about the Srimad Bhagavatam through Mahaprabhu. Actually, it's one of the very interesting exercises. Personally, I have benefited greatly from that. I understood the importance of Bhagavatam verses by two criteria. How often Prabhupada quotes those verses, and how often Mahaprabhu quotes those verses. These are the two criteria for me to try to learn the verses. Prabhupada's is the first one, because Prabhupada quotes many different verses for regular preaching. So that's our priority. And also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu quotes many verses from Srimad Bhagavatam and other places too. So we understand Bhagavatam better through the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So although Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered a further development of Bhagavatam, when you have read Bhagavatam or got the essence of it and you've gone to Chaitanya Charitamrita, then you can appreciate Bhagavatam better. Because now you are seeing through the eyes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is why Prabhupada says that in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, I have given a section on the life and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is a person Bhagavat. Okay? Any other point? Question? Yes. Mike, please. Yes, go on, speak. Switch it on.
Hare Krishna. Just wanted to add one point from yesterday's discussion. How Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost scripture. It is the greatest Purana. You quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam 1 point, canto 1, chapter 1st and verse number 2, from the purport of Srila Prabhupada. You mentioned 2 points. First is, Srila Vyasadev is the author of all other Vedic literature, yet he recommends the study of Srimad Bhagavatam above all other. And another point you mentioned, the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, also recommends the Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Puran and distinguishes it from all the other Puranas. These two things actually establish the Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost scripture.
Yes. So we follow the recommendations of great personalities. So when they recommend, Vyasadeva is recommending, Mahaprabhu is recommending, Shukadeva Goswami is recommending. So that is strong recommendation. Then we also follow.
Yes, another.
Okay. Yes.
Another point from today's discussion, which actually I took as an essence, as you mentioned fruit from beginning, you mentioned the fruit. Veda is like a fruit, like you gave the example of mango. It has four parts: seed, skin, pulp, and juice. You mentioned how seed is like Gyan Kanda, skin is Karm Kanda, pulp is Bhakti Yoga, and juice, which is the essence of the fruit, is Srimad Bhagavatam, all tasty, all nectar. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Okay, one last point before we, okay, we'll take here. Yes. Before we go on to the next category. Remember, these are the categories that all of you have done. I'm just following what you have given.
This has a small question, that the Bhagavad Gita is like preliminary to study, and also Chaitanya Charitamrita is so wonderful to read. But I've been just wondering all the time that how Srila Prabhupada, before going to West, he started translating Srimad Bhagavatam rather than any other literature. So, isn't it, it shows that the Bhagavatam is actually the most important than the other things, because Srila Prabhupada had some basis to go to West to preach.
Yes, by that time he had already translated Bhagavad Gita. And next was Srimad Bhagavatam. And after that he took up Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, in the meanwhile, he also had smaller books like Ishopanishad and many other. Easy Journey was one of his very first, I think even way before 1955 or 1960, something like that. But in the meanwhile, other smaller books he also published, he wrote. But this was a sequence. There was Bhagavad Gita, there were few cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. He completed up to 10th, certain part of it. And meanwhile, Chaitanya Charitamrita was also continuing.
My point is that Prabhupada, before go to West,
he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam.
He wrote Srimad Bhagavatam.
Two cantos.
Yeah. That was because the Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna, so that it can purify the Western countries.
Yes.
And that.
Yes. How much importance he gave to Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, he didn't complete the whole Bhagavatam before he left. He did. He had only two or three cantos. I think two cantos. Yeah. Yes, correct. Exchange for? Yes. So he had earlier also some manuscripts, especially Bhagavad Gita. Right?
Maharaj, can you explain about commentaries, that who can do the commentaries and what explanation of the commentary?
That's the next category. Okay, so good point to go to the next category. The next category is, why is it not coming now on the screen? The next category is, what are the qualifications required to read, hear, understand, and speak Srimad Bhagavatam? First category was, why is the Srimad Bhagavatam so exalted? Where does it derive its supreme authority from? And what is the relationship of the Srimad Bhagavatam to the other Vedic scriptures? So this was the first category. Now the second category we're going to talk about is, what are the qualifications required for anyone to be able to hear, understand, read, and speak Srimad Bhagavatam? So this I have divided into several categories. For the first one, that one should hear only from the right source, the person Bhagavat, and not from others. This is the first requirement for hearing or reading. What to speak of speaking? Speaking comes later, isn't it? Speaking comes when you have heard. So there's no question of speaking until you have heard. Of course, there are some who venture to do that also. But one should not speak until one has heard. So then, you can speak rightly if you have heard rightly. So what is the meaning of hearing from the right source? So you should hear, Prabhupada explains, and the Bhagavatam explains, from the person Bhagavat, and not from any other source. So the right source is a person Bhagavat, and the wrong source is anybody else. Specifically referring to the professional reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam, who do it simply to make a livelihood. So in the first two quotes, Prabhupada explains that one must receive it in the proper disciplic succession. We can all have the transcendental light of the Supreme Brahman Sri Krishna from the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, provided it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya's private secretary, Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, advised all intending visitors who came to see the Lord at Puri to make a study of the Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. Person Bhagavatam is a self-realized bona fide spiritual master, and through him only can one understand the lessons of the Bhagavatam in order to receive the desired result. One can derive the study of the Bhagavatam. One can derive from the study of the Bhagavatam all benefits that are possible to be derived from the personal presence of the Lord. It carries with it all the transcendental blessings of Lord Sri Krishna that we can expect from his personal contact. Last two lines, very important. Right? We talked about how the Bhagavatam is as fully competent as Sri Krishna in every respect. So Prabhupada is repeating that here. He said, all benefits that are possible to be derived from the personal presence of the Lord can be derived simply from the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Even all the blessings of Sri Krishna, if Krishna were personally present in front of us giving us blessings, those same kind of blessings can be obtained simply by properly studying and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what a great benediction this is. Just imagine. Prabhupada used to say that sometimes people argue that Arjuna was fortunate because Krishna was personally present in front of him to speak the Bhagavad Gita. So, if Krishna comes in front of us and speaks, then I will accept Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada used to say, but these people do not know that there is no difference between Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita. So the same benefit that Arjuna received when Krishna was present in front of him can be obtained by anybody 5,000 years later if that person studies the Srimad Bhagavad Gita carefully. Because Bhagavad Gita is the transcendental sound vibration that is non-different from Krishna. So there is no difference between the two. Whatever benefit Arjuna derived, exactly the same benefit we can also derive from the Bhagavad Gita just by reading, studying the Bhagavad Gita and applying in our life. In the same way with the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Whatever blessings, whatever benedictions, whatever benefits that we can derive from Krishna's presence personally in front of us can all be obtained simply by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. But the condition for that is, as Prabhupada has explained here, we must receive it from somebody in the proper parampara who is coming in the disciplic succession. And that person must be the person Bhagavat. He must be self-realized. That means he has digested, he has assimilated, he is following perfectly the instructions and the injunctions of the Bhagavatam book. One who is a walking, talking Bhagavatam, who has assimilated these points of the Bhagavatam in his or her life, that is a person Bhagavat. So there is book Bhagavat and person Bhagavat. So if we hear from the person Bhagavat, then we can understand the book Bhagavat. And once you have understood the book Bhagavat, then you are with Krishna. You have all the benefits, all the benedictions possible if Krishna were personally present in front of you. So what is the right source then to hear? two points. Number one, it must come in the bona fide disciplic succession. Number two, person Bhagavat. We must hear from the person Bhagavat. So what are the two kinds of Bhagavat? Book Bhagavat, person Bhagavat. The book Bhagavatam can be understood only through person Bhagavat. This is the important point Prabhupada is making here. Oh, 3, not 30. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's first canto, third chapter, not 30th chapter. Okay? Just remember to make that correction. Then again, Prabhupada says in another purport, all transcendental messages are received properly in the chain of disciplic succession. This disciplic succession is called parampara. Unless therefore Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literatures are received through the parampara system, the reception of knowledge is not bona fide. And then he goes on to explain how Vyasadeva gave to Shukadeva, Shukadeva gave to Suta Goswami, and Suta Goswami of course went on to speak this message to the sages at Naimisharanya. Same point is given here, that even to study a material subject like medicine or anything else, medical books of anatomy, physiology are available in the market, but no one can become a qualified medical practitioner simply by reading such books at home. One has to be admitted to the medical college and study books under the guidance of learned professors. Similarly with the Srimad Bhagavatam. So if the principle applies even to applying material knowledge, how much more it should apply to spiritual knowledge, which is so much more deeper, so much more of a difficult subject matter to understand. Right? So the third thing, or rather as a continuation of the point, is that this principle applies even for mundane knowledge. Therefore, all the more for the knowledge of the Bhagavat. Yes. And when we say you must hear from the person Bhagavat, the hearing involves service also. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So it's not only pariprashnena, it's also sevaya. Upadekshanti tadjnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinaha. So for one who's a tattvadarshi, not only must one question, one must serve. Hearing is an important form of service. By service we mean not just physical service, that also is important, but even service with the mind and the intelligence is also very important. When one attentively hears, that is great service done, the Bhagavatam declares. So in this famous verse, yes. Yes, one question here.
Maharaj, you mentioned that there are two qualifications for the speaker of Bhagavatam. First is that he should be in parampara, and second is he should be person Bhagavat. So just if, what is the difference that if he is in parampara and if person Bhagavat? Why these two points are specified there? Just if he is in parampara is not enough? Or?
Well, the person Bhagavat is emphasized, is mentioned to emphasize that one must be following the teachings of the parampara. It's not simply a question of the formality of being initiated into a parampara. You see, one must actually be following the teachings in one's life. For example, somebody has taken initiation but doesn't follow the principles. You see, is not leading a life that is according to the principles of the Bhagavatam. So being initiated in the parampara is necessary but not sufficient. To make it sufficient, one has to actually live according to what has been taught in the parampara. Right? This, yes?
In locality, there are so many people, they speak on Bhagavatam and things like that. But generally, we see they are not from some strict standard parampara. So that also not should not be accepted, though they speak Bhagavatam.
We'll come to that. We'll see if Prabhupada has to say many strong things about that. In just a minute or two from now, we'll see. But this verse, of course, we chant it every morning. Nashta prayeshva bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishthiki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Now, what is a noteworthy point here? Yes. Okay, regular attendance in Bhagavatam classes, yes. Okay, second point is almost completely, all right. Third, service to the devotees, yes. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So, the service to the book Bhagavat is by hearing the Bhagavat. But since the Bhagavat also refers to the person Bhagavat, the word Bhagavat Sevaya also implies you serve the devotees. So both types of service. Therefore, in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, number one, that is how you serve the book Bhagavatam, by attending the class. And second, by rendering of service to the pure devotee, that is by serving the person Bhagavat. Then the benefit comes. So this is the purport of the word Bhagavat Seva. Sevaya means by rendering Bhagavat Seva. So both the things are important. Hearing the message of the Bhagavatam, that is a service to the book Bhagavatam, and personally serving the person Bhagavatam. All that is troublesome to the heart, nashta abhadreshu. Abhadra means that which is not good. Contaminations, not gentle, that is destroyed. But the word used is prayeshu, almost completely destroyed. Does anybody know why this is almost completely destroyed? Why not fully destroyed? This word prayeshu is important. Yes, Mathani. Because of the aparadhas, yes, but something from this verse itself? Well, yes, but you are hearing, and still why it is only, what does it say here, only almost completely destroyed? Yes. Something more? Yes, Pran Govind Prabhu? Okay, yes. Well, all that is right, correct, but still, not the answer. Look at the verse, that the key is in the verse itself. Mistake can still happen. Yes, Chinnarthan Prabhu. Yes, suppose we are. Still, why is it almost completely? Not fully completely. Yes. Yeah. All that is assumed. It's there. Yes, so that, you have to specify that little bit, elaborate on that point. You have to say something more. The word used here is Naishthiki, Nishtha. What are the 9 stages of bhakti? Shraddha, Adho Shraddha, then Sadhu Sang, then somebody wants to write it on a flip chart. Can you switch on the light so see this? First there is Shraddha, then Sadhu Sang, then in the beginning there is a little faith. Because of that little faith we come to the association of devotees, that's called Sadhu Sangha. Then when we come to the association of devotees, what do? Bhajana Kriya. We practice the regulative principles of devotional service. And when we do that, what happens? Anartha Nivritti. All the anarthas, all the unwanted things in the heart, they start getting destroyed. So that is not anartha, only anartha. Anartha Nivritti. So as the anarthas get destroyed, then we come to which platform? Nishtha. Then we come to the platform of Nishtha. Then Ruchi. Taste. Then Asakti, intense attachment for the Lord. Then Bhava, which is development of ecstatic symptoms of love. Just like when we see prasadam when we are hungry. And 9th, finally, Krishna Prem. The topmost stage of love, when love is 100% pure, is in which platform? Stage number 9. Krishna Prem. In Bhava Bhakti, it is very pure. We are almost there, but just a short distance away from that perfection, 100% perfection. In Bhava Bhakti, there may be very small traces of some anarthas remaining. Very small. Similarly, in Asakti, and before that in Ruchi, some very tiny traces are there still. This verse talks about the stage of Nishtha. When you have completed the Anartha Nivritti stage and gone on to Nishtha. At this stage, the anarthas that have been caused by your past karma, that is destroyed. And only what remains are the anarthas caused by your offenses. And that is extinguished only finally at the time of Krishna Prem. So some may remain even later. There are, of course, our Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has mentioned these things very nicely. But the point is that this verse is saying that by regularly attending classes, you then, because Nishtha means that you are steadfast now, you are fixed. You cannot be shaken in your resolve to serve Krishna. That is a stage of Nishtha. At stages before that, you can be shaken. So, when you regularly hear classes in the Bhagavatam and serve the devotees, gradually you come to the platform of Naishthiki Bhakti. And then, of course, by continuing to hear and practice and serving, then you will go beyond. So, this verse is specifically referring to the stage of Nishtha, Naishthiki Bhakti. Okay, so that is why it says almost completely destroyed. Prayeshu. It doesn't say Purneshu. Prayeshu means almost completely destroyed. Okay? So the principles here are, one must serve the book Bhagavatam by hearing, and one must serve also the person Bhagavatam, then we can be situated on the platform of Nishtha. So now here is a very beautiful description of the two types of Bhagavatas. The book Bhagavat and the Pustak Bhagavat by Prabhupada in the purports. Here is a remedy for eliminating all inauspicious things within the heart, which are considered to be obstacles in the path of self-realization. The remedy is the association of the Bhagavatas, in the plural, Prabhupada says. There are two types of Bhagavatas, namely the book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat. Both the Bhagavatas are competent remedies, and both of them, or either of them, can be good enough to eliminate the obstacles. Note this point, both of them, or either of them. But in order to understand the book, you need the person, and the person will direct you to the book. So they are always together. Usually they are not alone. Although each is competent, but the two are always together. Right? So Prabhupada placed so much emphasis on book distribution, on studying of the books, and so on. A devotee Bhagavat is as good as the book Bhagavat, because the devotee Bhagavat leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavat. And the book Bhagavat is full of information about the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees who are also Bhagavatas. Bhagavat book and person are identical. The devotee Bhagavat is a direct representative of Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. So by pleasing the devotee Bhagavat, one can receive the benefit of the book Bhagavat. Human reason fails to understand how by serving the devotee Bhagavat or the book Bhagavat, one gets gradual promotion on the path of devotion. Beautiful sentence. So you cannot apply mundane logic to understand this. But actually these are facts explained by Sri Narad Dev, who happened to be a maidservant's son in his previous life. And we all know the story, right? Narad Muni, as a young boy, he happened to serve the Bhakti Vedantas, the great devotees of the Lord who happened to come and stay nearby in the period of Chaturmasya. And they were discussing Krishna Katha, they were doing Kirtan, and he would be in their midst. And he would hear them all day long. He would serve them also very nicely. And just one time, by their permission, he took their Mahaprasadam, the remnants of their Prasadam. And because of that powerful association, he became very, very fixed in Krishna consciousness. He had not yet become a pure devotee, but he was well on the way. And by the arrangement of Providence, when a snake bit his mother and she died, he was alone and helpless in the world, no relatives, no family, nobody. Even as a young child, he left his village and wandered everywhere. Eventually, he realized the Supreme Lord. And the next life, he became Narad Muni. So this story, Prabhupada says here, explains beautifully the principles of the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. How the person Bhagavats are very important in our life. So we should always depend on the devotees. We should never think we are independent of the devotees. There are some who only want to be with devotees, and there are some who don't want to be with devotees and only want to study the books. We should do both, because we need both in our life. We need the persons, we need the devotees, and we need the books. So both things are essential. We have to balance these two things in our life. Sometimes when we live in ashram life, we have perhaps sometimes too much association. Isn't it? When you sit down to study books, then there's always somebody coming to something or the other. So we must respect each other's space for reading and studying Prabhupada's books. So if somebody in the ashram is studying, we must be careful not to unnecessarily go and disturb the person. Or we should not go and create some noise there in the room so that the person gets distracted from his reading. So we should be very careful to not disturb. And if somebody is reading, perhaps a separate room can be made for reading or something like that. But the important thing is, when we are reading, And when we are associating with devotees. So the time that is for reading should be guarded as a very precious thing. We should not disturb others. This purport we have seen earlier. Yes. Now to answer Krishna Balaram Prabhu's question. Let us see another purport of Srila Prabhupada. One can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. But there's a condition. How can you see? If one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Shukadev Goswami. One cannot, however, learn Bhagavatam from a bogus hired reciter whose aim of life is to earn some money out of such recitation and employ the earning in sex indulgence. No one can learn Srimad Bhagavatam who is associated with persons engaged in sex life. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Nor can one learn Bhagavatam from one who interprets the text by his mundane scholarship. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadev Goswami and no one else, if one at all wants to see Lord Sri Krishna in the pages. That is the process and there is no other alternative. So, that answers the questions. Anybody who is not a bona fide Bhagavat, we should not hear from him. In Vrindavan, there are many highly charismatic Bhagavat speakers. And as you come from Shatikara to our temple, you will see it so many. Every time there's new faces, all different types of reciters and so many different people. Big hoardings. Some of them will take luxury yachts to Singapore or to Switzerland and have Bhagavad Katha in the ship. Or some of them will have fancy things where crores of rupees are spent by some wealthy mercantile man. So all these are going on because the hearer and the listener and the speaker both have the same objective in mind. Those who arrange for such saptas, they have some piety, some pious mentality, but it's tainted by the fruitive mentality. And the speaker, he also has some piety, because how else would he have studied the Bhagavatam? And he's become quite expert, so obviously it's a blessing of Krishna. He has that potency, that charisma to speak, to recite the Bhagavatam. So there is some piety there. But again, there is a fruitive mentality behind that too. So where there is fruitive mentality like this, in the pages of the Bhagavatam, Krishna cannot emerge. So Prabhupada says, we'll go back to the first line of the purport, one can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized soul like Shukadev Goswami. There are many stories like this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also. One time a poet came from Bengal and he came to the devotees and he said, I want to present a poem that I have written glorifying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhagavan Acharya was a nice devotee, but he was very simple by nature. He said, yes, 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 let us hear. And then Bhagavan Acharya came to Swarup Damodar Goswami. And he said, you know, there is a poet who has come from Bengal, very brilliant poet. He has made some nice poems about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let us hear them. And Swarup Damodar became very angry. I will not narrate this pastime in detail. He said, you are very simple. You are just like a cowherd boy. And you just want to hear poetries or compositions made by anybody and everybody. Most of these people who are not trained in the parampara, Swarup Damodar said, they don't know properly the conclusions of devotion. And therefore the right things which overlap in rasa, they make mistakes in the bhava. This is called rasabhas. And for a person who is genuinely in bhakti, he doesn't like to hear all this. So therefore, neglect this. Don't ask me to come, and you should not hear it either. But because he was pressed so much by Bhagavan Acharya, who was such a nice, gentle devotee, he agreed. And when that Brahmana poet from Bengal began his recitation, he recited one verse. Swarup Damodar asked him to explain that. It was full of mistakes. Devotional conclusions were all wrong. And Swarup Damodar admonished him, chastised him like anything. Fortunately, that poet took a humble position. At that time, all the devotees were wonderstruck. When the poet recited that verse, all the devotees started saying, "Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful." Only Swarup Damodar stopped it and said, "Tell me, let me know, what is the meaning of this?" Then when the devotees heard Swarup Damodar's explanation, then they realized, "My God, yes, it's correct. The conclusions in this verse are all wrong." So you see, sometimes general devotees who may not be well educated in the books, they may hear something that resembles our books and our philosophy. They say, "Yes, yes, yes, that's perfect. He's speaking the same thing." How many times we have devotees coming to us, new people, who say, "Well, I was hearing this other such and such speaker from such organization, and he speaks exactly the same thing as you people do." Or when there are new people and you tell them, "Well, you should hear from devotees." He says, "Yes, we hear on the television, there are some spiritual channels, there are so many people who come and they all say the same thing as you say." No, it's not the same thing. It just superficially appears to be the same thing. But the conclusions are different. They are wrong. Unless one has been trained in a parampara, and unless we have the good fortune of having the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who so clearly explained all the principles, we are bound to make a mistake in explaining the philosophy. And others who hear will also be misled. The blind leading the blind. So then the Brahmana poet took a humble position, and at that time Swarup Damodar told him, "Jao Bhagavat padho Vaishnavar sthane." If you want to learn Bhagavat, go to the person Bhagavat. You will learn from him. Then you will understand how to compose poetry and other literature and glorification of the Supreme Lord. You have to be trained in the art of glorifying Krishna. It's not something anybody can do. Not anybody can just simply glorify Krishna. You require knowledge. You require training to glorify. For example, if I am a 7th standard fail, I have no knowledge of arithmetic at all, and even in that 7th standard fail, even from 3rd standard I was failing in arithmetic, can I glorify some Nobel Prize winner in mathematics or something? What do I know to glorify? What can I say? What is my capacity to glorify that person's mathematical knowledge? What do I know to say? Similarly, unless one has knowledge about Krishna, how can one glorify Krishna? Of course, Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana. So even if somebody who is not well versed in the philosophy glorifies him, Krishna accepts it somehow, because he is merciful to everybody. But the devotees are not pleased with such glorification, because it is full of all wrong conclusions mixed together. So therefore, it is essential that we hear only from people in the parampara who will not distort the conclusions. And another point that is being made here in this purport is that the person who speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam should also lead a life of purity and specifically a life free of sex indulgence, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport. Otherwise, that person will not have the purity to present the Bhagavatam, to understand the Bhagavatam, and such things will not make an impact on our heart, a positive impact on our heart. So these are all nice purports, beautiful, each of them. There is no gain, however, in accepting the message of the Bhagavatam from unbelievers, atheists and professional reciters who make a trade of the Bhagavatam for laymen. It was delivered to Shukadev Goswami and he had nothing to do with the Bhagavat business. He did not have to maintain family expenses by such trade. Srimad Bhagavatam should therefore be received from the representative of Shukadev, who must be in the renounced order of life without family encumbrance. Milk is undoubtedly very good and nourishing, but when it is touched by the mouth of a snake, it is no longer nourishing. Rather, it becomes a source of death. Similarly, those who are not strictly in the Vaishnava discipline should not make a business of this Bhagavatam and become a cause of spiritual death for so many hearers. Very strong purports, isn't it? So see, sometimes it needs strong words to push forward the proper conclusions. So there are many, many quotes like this. I have just taken a few of them. Okay, so I think we'll stop here for questions. And the next point will be how to ask questions. Okay, shall we go do deal with that? Since anyway, so many hands are up. Let us just finish this one section then. The first topic that we covered in this category was that we have to hear from the right source. We have to hear from one who is a person, Bhagavat, and he comes in the proper parampara. We should not hear from anybody else, specifically those who are professional reciters, those who do not have pure conduct in their life. We should hear from the person Bhagavat, then Krishna will manifest in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Now the second topic is how to ask questions. Okay, let us read. There's only one quote on this. Purport. Those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put many questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning. But this should not be done in a challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. This is also the way recommended in Bhagavad Gita. One must learn the transcendental subject by submissive oral reception from the right sources. Therefore, these sages address the speaker Suta Goswami with great respect. So how must one ask the question? In a mood of submission and not in a challenging spirit or not for any other purpose. I want to share one memory that I have about this. Many years ago, I remember encouraging one Grihastha devotee who was very sincere. This is more than 15, 18 years ago. At that time, he was a new devotee and he was very eager to learn. And he had been in the movement already a couple of years. And I wanted to encourage him to give Bhagavatam class, and he prepared for it and he came. And the passage was on Narad Muni's teachings to Vyasadeva. Exactly this section which we talked about. And there was one brahmachari, I remember, who was a little proud. He was a little proud that he was a little scholarly in the scriptures, and he was proud that he was a brahmachari. And he didn't look upon grihasthas in a very nice way. So this Grihastha devotee gave a reasonably decent class. He was a little nervous, but he managed to speak nicely. And then there was time for questions. Immediately this brahmachari asked the question. The tone was not very polite. And he asked, what was Narad Muni in the previous life? Right? So this devotee didn't know. He had not so thoroughly studied the Bhagavatam, so he didn't know the answer. So he said, I'm sorry, I don't know. So then he said, but you should know. You're sitting on the Vyasasana, you should know. So then, anyway, then I intervened and we settled the whole thing there. And then after the class, I asked this brahmachari, what was the purpose you had in mind in asking this question? Why did you ask this question? It seems that you knew that he would not know, right? Then why did you ask? What was your goal? No, he should know. Anybody who sits on the Vyasasana should know these things. It's fine. But do you know everything? Is it possible that somebody may ask you a question that you don't know the answer of? Is it possible? Are you Krishna? You're not Krishna. So any question can come to even the most learned person. So we should not ask a question to humiliate the speaker. We should not ask a question that will put the speaker down or show him in poor light. We should be encouraging in our approach. If somebody is here learning to speak, yes, encourage this person. We see this culture in the Bhagavatam. First, the listener or the person who asks questions will glorify the speaker and encourage the speaker. The speaker feels encouraged. Everywhere, again and again, we see this in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Every time there is a conversation, it always follows the same trend. And then the speaker is encouraged. And then he begins to give answers. He's satisfied and he speaks very nicely all the answers. So this is the duty, to not to try to put the speaker down or try to show that he has a mistake or that he doesn't know something, but rather to encourage the speaker, so to bring the best out of him. He may know less, he may know more, whatever he may know, but to bring the best out of him. The goal of a question should be either to clarify a genuine doubt that we have in our mind and we want to know the answer, and or to increase the relish or the taste or the rasa of the discussion. Increase the ras, the mellow. Sometimes people may ask the questions even though they know the answer, but they just want to hear it again. Because they're just so nice, they want to hear it. Sanatana Goswami asked questions to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, Sanatana, you're already a great sadhu. You already know the answers to these questions, but still you ask me. That's because of your nature as a sadhu. A sadhu by nature inquires humbly. So for the sake of setting an example of how a sadhu should behave, you are asking me all these questions. So this could be another reason, that even though you know the answer, you still want to know because it increases the taste. Maybe you want to hear the answer explained in a better way, in another way, from another angle of vision. So questions are asked to increase the taste for everybody, the assembled devotees. This is the way questions should be asked. And as we discussed yesterday, Srimad Bhagavatam is full of questions. And just see how those questions have been asked. Whenever you study, the next time you go through the book and you come across questions, see how the explanation is there. What is the mood of the person who's asking questions? How respectful he is? And what kind of a prelude he gives before he comes into the first question? So this is our culture. Questions should never be asked also to prove a point. Questions should not be asked to create some controversy unnecessarily. We shouldn't have some vested interest or some agenda. Questions should not be asked, or comments should not be made also to demonstrate that I know something. I know more than the speaker, or I know more than others, or I know a lot. And the question should always be, even if it is there to supplement what the speaker is saying, many times there are comments, and these comments make a very wonderful addition to what the speaker has said. Many times when the listeners make comments, it adds to the taste. Because those comments are so nice. They cause further illumination of the subject matter. That kind of comment is wanted. That is wonderful. But if the comment has motives other than that, then it spoils the setting. So therefore, the questions must also be put submissively, humbly, and with the right objective in mind. So this is a very important point. Yes? Practically, we have all experienced different kinds of questions, different kinds of discussions. So see, the Srimad Bhagavatam is a whole culture in itself. what a wonderful culture is, culture emerges through the pages of the Bhagavatam for us. Even how the katha is done, how the devotees deal with each other in the course of these discussions. Very wonderful. So anyway, we'll stop here on this point of how to ask questions. So if any of you have any questions or comments, you can make. Yes, Prabhu. And tomorrow we'll continue with this point.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. It was mentioned that we should not hear from the professional reciters and those who are talking about Bhagavad Katha and then earning livelihood. And then sometimes we find that the outsider, the people in general, they come to our temple and then they ask the devotees, can you come to our house and do Bhagavad Katha and or some program, some section of Bhagavatam, and then they say that we'll give you so much donations like that. So as a practitioner devotee coming in the right parampara, as you heard, that what should be our approach?
Well, for us it's an opportunity to go to people to preach Krishna consciousness as has been presented by our great acharyas. So if we have an opportunity where we can go and correctly present our Siddhanta, and if they are already very pious by nature and they are receptive, then certainly there is no harm in going, even though initially they may have some other conception. But if we find that even after that there is perhaps some other objective they have in mind, then we can decide always depending on the circumstances whether it is a waste of time for us to go there or what. But certainly if somebody is receptive, somebody is eager to hear, and there is opportunity for us to present clearly Srila Prabhupada's teachings, then there is no harm certainly in availing of that opportunity. But we have to see the circumstances exactly. There may be practical considerations also. If the one place is too far, you have to go so far and come back. There may be opportunities nearby also. So other practical points have to be also seen. Any other question?
Maharaj, I want to confirm. I want to ask that they say that giving donation, they want to give Lakshmi. So in that matter, what should we do?
Well, if they want to give Lakshmi, it's fine.
We should not make trade.
Yes, we should not make trade. We should not insist that I will come to you only if you give this much money. My fee is so much. That kind of thing should not be done. We can ask them, say they are calling us there and they have to pay our diesel something for going, coming, we have to pay, and as a donation they will give something, some practical little points like that. But not that we ask that this is our fee, that we charge so much. That should not be done. Sometimes, of course, what happens is that people don't take you seriously unless they have to pay for it. But generally, that's why we have to judge whether they are serious candidates or not. Okay? Yes, Prabhu. Can you pass the mic?
What was clearly stated there in Prabhupada's purpose is that people who make a livelihood and indulge themselves in sense enjoyment from that money they're receiving. If we as devotees come and we receive a donation for the temple, it's not like you're going to have a nice time with the money. So.
Yes, okay. Any other questions? Somebody had, yes, Madhavendra Prabhu.
Krishna Maharaj, thank you for this nice explanation regarding the Bhakti Bhagavat. That Bhakti Bhagavat, sometimes the Bhakti Bhagavat is connected with the parampara and all the qualification is there. But still, how you will know that he has the Nashtiki Bhakti academy? He has Nashtiki Bhakti in heart. He can speak nicely, and from his presentation we can understand he knows Tattva. But how will we know that he has the Naishtik Bhakti in the heart?
You see, the Naishtik Bhakti is, the reference here is to the listener, not to the speaker here. In that verse, the person who hears, he will develop to the point of Naishtik Bhakti. Alright? And as far as the qualification of the speaker, of course, the more exalted the speaker, the more potent his words are, and the more impact it will have on our hearts to purify. That is also a fact. But at the same time, if somebody is a sincere devotee who is following the principles, has heard faithfully, and is repeating faithfully, then we should hear without making judgment, because it is not for us to make judgment on who has evolved to what stage. We cannot judge all these things. I will give a simple example. You all know Janani Vas Prabhu, right? Yesterday itself I was explaining somewhere, I don't remember to whom, yesterday before somewhere I was explaining. Of course, he is a legend in ISKCON, Janani Vas Prabhu. And he often, very often, even in the early days and even now, he goes and sits in the class given in Bengali, which he doesn't understand, given by a devotee who is very new. He goes and sits in the class. And when somebody asked him, why do you do that? He said, is Bhagavad being spoken? But it's in Bengali, you don't understand, but still it's divine sound vibration. But it's a new devotee, fine, but he's still speaking Bhagavad. Sincerely. This is the attitude. This is where you see what is the attitude of a hearer. So even if the speaker is not a very advanced devotee, but at least he's bona fide. He's not going to say something that is not proper. And in his life also reasonably he's sincerely following the principles. Then by hearing, depending on our attitude, we will make advancement. And then if you have the double fortune of having a very potent devotee and you hear with the same attitude positively, then of course you make also nice advancement. But the important thing is we hear regularly, and we'll come to this a little later. Any other comment or question? Yes. Hello.
Hare Krishna. Will you please explain this statement of Prabhupada in the purport that what it means to see Krishna on the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes, Krishna emerges. You see, everything becomes Krishna-maya. When you are just like when Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was a very wealthy devotee, pure devotee. And externally nobody could make out that he was a pure devotee. Any ordinary person, if he saw him, or even if a devotee saw him but didn't know his exalted status, he would think, oh, he's just a sense gratifier. The kind of silken clothes that he wore, his whole house was so opulently furnished, he was chewing pan, and he had servants fanning him, and he was living like a royal person, sitting there in all comforts and luxury. And one time, Mukunda said, I want to take you to meet a pure devotee, and he took Gadadhar Pandit there. When Gadadhar Pandit reached, he was surprised. He was expecting some renounced person, and he took him to somebody who was living in the midst of such luxury. And in his mind, he committed some offense, thinking, this person, a pure devotee, looks like such a sense enjoyer. He didn't say anything, but in his mind, he thought like that. Mukunda understood by looking at the expression on Gadadhar Pandit's face as to what he was thinking. So immediately Mukunda, who was a very sweet singer, he recited some verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. As soon as Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard that verse, he broke out into all the symptoms of divine devotional ecstasy. And it became such a scene that everything was destroyed. His ecstatic symptoms became so strong that the bed was destroyed, the curtains were destroyed, everything was... So the verse was sung, as soon as the Bhagavat was spoken, Pundarik Vidyanidhi went into that, the Krishna had emerged in front of him, so to speak. He was so absorbed because Krishna is non-different from his descriptions, from his pastimes, from the narrations. So Krishna is present personally. So there is no difference between Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna. So when Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken, it's as if Krishna is in front of you and you're relishing Krishna's association and his pastimes. Okay, so we'll stop here. It is almost 1:15. So thank you very much. We will meet again tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Hare Krishna, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare Bol.